Hello and welcome to the Streets.mn podcast. I'm Bill Lindeke, your host and contributor at tcstreetsforpeople.org and Streets.mn. This podcast is an almost weekly series of conversations with people in the Twin Cities urbanism community about city, streets, and urban design. In this episode, we're talking with Nate Hood and Spencer Agnew, both of whom are pillars of the Twin Cities urban blogging community. You can find Nate's writing on his blog, Thoughts on the Urban Environment, and Spencer's writing is at cityoflakesurbanism.com. Both of them post semi-regularly on our website at tcstreetsforpeople.org as well. We sat down a little over a week ago at the Astor Cafe, a lovely bar and restaurant nestled in a failed downtown mall along Minneapolis's St. Anthony Main area. The building itself is the oldest continually operating commercial building in the city and was originally built in 1855 as a brick factory. Nate Spencer and I discussed a variety of topics, including the proposals for the Viking Stadium, NIMBYism in the Twin Cities, the pluses and minuses of a downtown casino, Block E, and what's happening along the Central Corridor during construction. This was my first attempt to create a podcast, so it was a little bit experimental. And unfortunately, the experiment didn't go so well. The sound quality is very bad, and one of the microphones didn't work properly, so I did my best to filter out the noise and equalize the levels of our voices, but feel free to stop listening if you can't stand the audio. Also, I would really appreciate any feedback, comments, and questions about how to improve these conversations, either about topics or about audio quality problems. I'm experimenting with a few different formats for these talks, and this one was kind of a free-for-all where we just shot ideas back and forth to each other. You can comment on our website, tcstreetsforpeople.org, or email me at blindeke@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy our conversation, and thanks for listening to the Streets.mn podcast.
Snow happens.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's good that Minneapolis is doing this. I guess. Probably totally unenforceable. They're not going to do anything about it, kind of. What was the rule before?
That's what I was wondering, and I don't know exactly, especially for single-family houses, I'm not sure.
As someone who lived in Minneapolis last winter, which was a really snowy winter.
Yeah.
Most of my neighbors were pretty good. Like, by and large, I mean, I think there may have been one person on the block, but it got to the point where I think they were maybe just gone for the weekend and just packed down there, and then it melted, and it was just, no matter what they did, there was nothing that they could do. My fear is, jokingly, I guess, that they're going to treat this new ordinance like parking tickets on snow emergency days, where you'll have the parking enforcer out there at 7:01 and they'll just hit everybody.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it seems kind of unenforceable.
Yeah. Well, there's a fine line between, I didn't know the exact wording of it, but like, between like, oh, it's a little bit unshoveled versus we need to give you a fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Didn't there used to be a situation where you'd get a warning? Because I've read articles about how, for example, outside the law or some city property or something, like there was, you know, blocks and blocks of sidewalk that was just icy and unwalkable. You know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I would imagine there's various ways that you could look at that. I would imagine that this is the way that they're going to enforce it. If any neighbors call 311,
yeah,
that's when they'll do it.
Yeah.
But by and large, I think they're probably just going to let it go.
Yeah, I think that's right. So the snow emergency apocalypse isn't going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Because
that would be pretty wild. You'd really shovel your sidewalk if that happened.
Yeah. I lived on 34th and Emerson in South Minneapolis. And mostly walked and used public transit back in the day, 6 months ago. I moved to St. Paul, and now, like, all has changed. Moved to St. Paul, and then I quickly got a new job in St. Louis Park. Crazy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but most people were pretty good. And even if they didn't shovel, I feel like there are enough people, coincidentally, that would walk in the neighborhood where they would kind of create their own pathways, kind of like your preference paths.
Yeah.
And I almost prefer the preference path of like cast down snow, the shoveled sidewalks, because when it's completely shoveled bare and you get a little bit of melt, then you get ice.
Yeah.
And that's like the only times I've ever fallen on a sidewalk in winter is completely shoveled.
Yeah,
I just hit an ice patch.
I think there's a false sense of security when it's shoveled. I mean, that's not to say that people shouldn't shovel, you know. But yeah.
Are we recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope. This is an experiment, like I said.
Yeah.
We might have to tweak it.
Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah. It's a good idea, though.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the idea, too. Like a weekly. I could, this is the vision. As you both bloggers, and I like both of your blogs, by the way. But it's like, the amount of time you spend on a post is a lot, right? Versus, here we're gonna spend an hour on it. That's all we're gonna spend on it.
Yeah.
So that just the time in the time out ratio is pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
At least in my mind.
Yeah.
We'll see how it turns out in reality.
And like, as a user of podcasts and a reader of blogs, you can get so much more content out of a podcast than, you know, no one's going to read a blog for an hour, but there's several podcasts that I listen to for 30 minutes.
Which ones?
A lot. Like, KunstlerCast is always one of my favorites.
Did you listen to the recent one about the talk that he gave with the guy from the New York City Bike Planning Department?
The TA, Transportation Alternatives, yeah.
That was fabulous.
I didn't listen to
that. I thought. It was supposed to be a debate. It was at some college. Skidmore, I think, is the one near in Saratoga Springs where James Kunstler lives.
Okay.
And
yeah, it was. I think it was more of an agreeance, by and large.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that was really good. If you haven't listened to that, I really recommend it.
Yeah. Well, they agreed, but they also had such a difference in tone.
Yeah.
And that's really the big difference, or the debate, and like at least people I talk to about urban planning stuff is like, how to frame it. Do you frame it as like, we need to do this because there's all these problems, or because we need to do this because it's really good for the economy, or it's like good for society, or, you know, it's like a negative versus a positive kind of valence on planning issues or something like that.
Jim seems to have taken the negative approach.
Yeah, you can say that.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's definitely, I listen to that podcast too. He's wildly entertaining.
Yeah.
I think a really, I don't know where I stand on this issue, but it seems like the big debate kind of in urbanism v. new urbanism is the skyscraper and what's the future? Should we keep building it? Should we take the David Owen, Ed Glaser, or possibly more of the Andres Duany, Jim Kunstler angle where, look, these are large buildings that take a huge amount of capital. Are we going to be able to retrofit these things in the future? What does the energy future look like? Are these things cool? I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's one thing about Kunstler that I don't always agree with is, the opposite of the skyscraper. Because unlike, you know, government spending on highways where, you know, that's kind of a huge waste of public money, the skyscrapers are all privately financed. And, you know, it's not like these people are pouring their money into financing those type of things without thinking about the long-term feasibility. You know, it could be that 30 years down the line, our energy scenario makes that type of building infeasible. But I don't know. Not right now.
Well, when's the last skyscrapers that were built here in Minneapolis?
Good question. Was the Carlisle
last
one?
And the sky, there's one in Elliott Park, too, called, like, the Sky...
Skyscape.
Skyscape.
You're looking back 03 and 07, I think.
Yeah.
Completion dates.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
There are some that are being planned right now, though. I guess there's that one in Uptown that's going in, like at Hennepin and Lake, kind of in that area. How tall is that?
Mosaic, that's like 10 stories, 6 or 7 stories of parking, and three stories of office on top, I think.
No kidding. That's a lot.
Yeah. It's a ton of parking.
It's actually funny when you think about it, too. And for the community development grants that were part of the stimulus package, they were divvied out to each community. I think Minneapolis got $42 million, I think. Don't quote me on this verbatim. But I think they used all of their community development grants to aid in the developing of that building and that part of the structure.
Huh. Good for Stuart Ackerberg.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, actually, great for him. And I'm really happy to see new office space in Uptown. I think that's definitely something that's needed. I'm just really surprised that the market wasn't able to deliver it. But now to take this and transition to the Viking Stadium, why would, if the developer can get the money from the city doing very little from a business perspective, why not?
Well, you saw the thing that happened today, right? Did you guys see that? So the Vikes, well, it's the one about how they are not going to play ball unless it's in Arden Hills, basically, is what they wrote a letter to the city or to the skate or to somebody saying that the deal that's on the table for however much the Vikings are going to put in for the stadium only applies to Arden Hills, and if it's somewhere else, they wouldn't even think about the same amount of money that they would put in to the project. And I guess all that says to me is that Ziggy Wilf really wants Arden Hills as the site. For what reason? I don't know. Development potential of the area, the ability to capitalize on all the revenue streams, so you get parking, restaurant, every possible dollar that's spent going to a Vikings game is going into his pocket or the team's pocket.
Yeah,
right?
I think when you throw something downtown, people have alternatives. People can go to other bars, other restaurants. They can take the train. They can park elsewhere. If he builds this place in Arden Hills, he's literally going to control everything. Like, he'll get a cut of everything. And I think it's probably very tempting for him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at two separate situations, you have one in Philadelphia with the new, I guess, Eagles Stadium. The owner is part of the ticket price, whether you take the train or take the bus or even walk, if that's even possible. Every ticket has a $2 parking surcharge attached to it. So I imagine that Wilf would try to do something very similar to that. Or he could take the route of the Dallas Cowboys, where if you want to park on-site at New Cowboys Stadium, I think it's upwards of $75 per vehicle. So, I mean, they really control parking like that.
Are you kidding me?
No. And I have absolutely no idea where Wilf is going to take it, but these are things that...
That's where he'll take it.
That's what other people have done, and I would not be surprised at all if he took that same option.
Yeah, I mean, I understand exactly what Wilf's thinking, you know, get the public to subsidize the majority of the cost for a stadium and parking and development that he controls. I mean, I just don't understand why the state would be interested in doing that, why Ramsey County would be interested in doing that. But
yeah, why are they? You have no clue.
I don't know. I know that there's a few county commissioners that are kind of making this their pet project, and they're really pushing it. And yeah, I'm not sure what base C is the benefit to Ramsey County.
I don't know. To me, it's like this idea that if you're the mayor, I mean, and all the projects that I guess I'm interested in right now are in the same ballpark of what I think is a bad idea, but it's getting a lot of political support. Because why? Because jobs, right? It's like I just wrote this week about I went to this political party event for the city council member one, and then I ended up chatting with these two guys that run unions in St. Paul, and they were talking about the Viking Stadium, and I was like, oh, it's a terrible idea. And they were like, oh, no, it's great. Are you kidding? It's all these jobs, and it's the WPA for the modern day, is what they said, you know. And that it was so important economically for construction workers and contractors and engineers. And, you know, I can see why they would have a stake in it, too. But I just think there's this, like, economic impetus to do something, right? Like, if you're a politician, you can get any money anyway. Like, if you're the city, if you're the state, right, if you can find a way to get jobs created somehow, you'll do it, even if it's a terrible idea, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that, do you think, part of it?
I think it is. I mean, that's one of the kind of like the recurring themes that you hear coming from like the proponent side is jobs, jobs, jobs. And I believe the number is 3,200 jobs.
Yeah, that's what they said to me too.
For people on the podcast, I want to put jobs in quotations. You're gonna have your initial construction jobs, which yeah, it would be beneficial to the industry, but I don't think that you should create jobs for the sake of creating jobs. You should try to create jobs into things that are gonna have some meaningful end result. And I don't think that this Viking Stadium, although somewhat worthwhile. Oh, sorry, excuse me. Can I have the Surly when you guys are ready?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Your ID, man.
Oh.
And yeah, that's all.
All right, thank you.
What do you got going on there?
Oh, I just did a little number crunch out. Just wondering, take that $650 million, which is, the amount of public money that they want to go into this.
Yeah.
How many people could you pay $30,000 a year for 5 years?
Well, that's what I mean. It's like at the same time that they're creating jobs for building this temple to the gods for whatever. Are you guys football fans? I mean, I don't
kind of.
Is that even a relevant question to ask?
I suppose yes, it is. Like the proponents will say, like it seems like they always accuse. I read Ed's blog.
Yeah. I invited him to join us actually, but he's out of town.
It seems like people on Twitter always accuse him of not being a fan. I mean, whether this was the Minnesota Vikings or, let's just say, the Green Bay Packers, who most Minnesota sports fans, like, despise.
No, I'm a Packer fan now.
It's if you look at this as, like, an economic decision, I think it is a very, very bad idea. You could possibly make the argument that the Vikings bring some type of social good. But then the question is, do they bring a $650 million social good to the state? And the other thing I want to point out is $165 million is not $165 million because we don't have that money. We actually have a $5 billion deficit. So we're going to go in debt to get this money, which in turn you pay debt service, interest, and all that great stuff that goes along with it. So it's going to be a lot more. It's probably going to be upwards of $1 billion of state investment if you look at interest and all that great stuff.
Yeah.
So, I suppose we could pray for hyperinflation and make it nothing, but...
Do you think it's going to happen? What do you two think?
I think it will happen.
In Arden Hills?
I wouldn't say it's definitely going to happen in Arden Hills, but I think a stadium will happen with public financing. It's interesting, though, like, the fact that it's an NFL stadium, I don't know, I feel like the NFL just has so much bargaining power because there's a limited supply of teams, there's other cities that would also make the dumb decision to spend a lot of public money to build a stadium for a team. So just that the chance that the Vikings move to LA, I think will motivate our legislators to make the stadium deal happen. Whether it's Arden Hills, I don't know. And it's interesting. There's two questions. One is, does it make sense for us to be spending public money on the stadium? Second question, if we are doing that, what location makes sense?
Yeah.
And do we build it in Arden Hills where we have to build new highway infrastructure, new parking, there's no transit service, there's no amenities like hotels, restaurants.
There's nothing. There's literally just vacant, blank slate.
Yeah. Which makes sense for, Wolf likes that because he can build his new parking lots, get control of that revenue, build a hotel, get all that revenue. But, we're spending over $600 million in public money. Do we want it in a place like downtown Minneapolis where you have existing light rail lines, the plant light rail lines, all the bus service, existing parking ramps, tons of hotels and restaurants, all that in place where, it probably doesn't pay off
but still, if we're making that much of a public investment, we are at least getting some return in terms of capitalizing on our existing transit infrastructure.
I agree with you, but to play devil's advocate, if you look at a place like the Metrodome, it takes up prime downtown real estate, and basically what we have is a non-tax-paying entity, like smack down in the middle of downtown. What if you tore that up and actually put real taxpayers down there? I think you could possibly do a lot for the urban environment. Great, you could probably put some decent urban design down there as opposed to like the alien spaceship that is the Metrodome that somehow landed in the 80s in downtown. And, you know, the city could benefit from it for property taxes as opposed to like a sliver of drink tax.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, the experience of the Metrodome proves that the stadium doesn't, an NFL stadium at least, doesn't spur nearby redevelopment. I think still surrounded by the stadiums and parking lots.
Yeah, which is what you do at a football game. You tailgate. I've never done that, but that's what I hear people do, yeah. Right? Yeah.
But that's why, you know, if it does happen, I kind of like these new potential sites that have been coming out. The other side of downtown, over by 394, 94, it's kind of little back corners of the North Loop that currently kind of light industrial in character. Especially the site that's called the Excel site, I think there's some land owned by Excel Energy. It's kind of literally right between 394 and 94. That's not a location that, you know, I see residential or commercial redevelopment happening anytime soon. It could be a nice location for a stadium, because, you know, you're not going to want to live in an apartment right by two major highways, but putting a stadium there would be close to light rail, close to parking ramps, and it would, again, free up the Metrodome land for redevelopment, like you said.
I think one of the arguments that proponents use that I think is really bogus is that they spur development. I can't think of one example, or at least in Minnesota, where a stadium has spurred any type of development whatsoever. With the Excel Center, you still have an empty gravel lot that is literally across the street.
That's owned by the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe they want to put another, like, the ponds. It's like a skating rink facility.
That's the plan that I remember reading about, yeah.
And West 7th looks a little nicer, but I would argue that probably would have happened anyways. I don't think that the Excel Center really has much to do with that. Definitely not the Dome. And you could possibly make the argument with Target Field that I think the Warehouse District was gentrifying, and I think it was getting the condoization way before the Twins even proposed building there. It just happened to, you know, work out there.
Yeah, I don't, you know, especially residential development, I don't think the stadium, especially an NFL stadium, is going to stimulate anything like that. I do think, though, that there is an external benefit to businesses like restaurants and hotels. I know the downtown Minneapolis hotels get a rush on Vikings game days. Again, it's not enough of a benefit to justify the public expense, but if that expense is going to happen anyway, I would be even more supportive of a stadium location that provides that benefit to businesses instead of a location in the middle of nowhere that provides all of the benefits as well.
How do you guys feel about using casino money funding to build a stadium, particularly this blocky proposal?
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. So I did some research about downtown casinos right before this, and I found out, well, I learned that there's this new wave of casinos being built in cities across the U.S. Like, there was a tax referendum a vote in Ohio. It was a ballot measure in 2009 where they put on the ballot statewide, we'd like to build four casinos in four cities in Ohio, downtowns. And these are the four cities, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Columbus, and Dayton, I think, are the four. And it passed somehow, I guess. I wasn't there. I never heard of this before, but I would bet that the casino lobby, like, put a lot of money into a lot of ads or whatever. Somehow it passed. And I guess people like to gamble. It's another thing. It's like football. It's like, it's hard for me to relate. But I know other people really like Vegas and going to Vegas. So I don't want to judge about that. But Anyway, so it's this new wave of, like, urban kind of solutions, you know, like the festival marketplace was, and, like, the stadiums were for a while, and, like, the downtown mall, like, when Block E was built, right? It was, like, this kind of this trend. They built this one in San Diego that was kind of successful, sort of, called, I forgot what it's called, but it's a downtown mall in San Diego. And so this is one of those solutions. In fact, like, just this St. Anthony Main area where we are today has two kind of urban revitalization city plan things that tried to happen down here, the both of which failed almost completely. We're in one. We're in the St. Anthony Main was in the early 80s was this going to be this new downtown mall. So I think this casino is like the latest iteration of this idea that developers and pitch to cities and get kind of state funding to promise that they're going to revitalize the city, right? So there's a long list of cities that have built casinos recently, Lansing, Michigan, or debated building casinos recently. Cleveland, Detroit, I think South Bend, Indiana, Cincinnati and Cleveland are both building it right now. Baltimore had it up for a vote and the mayor shot it down. Vancouver, Canada was going to build one and the mayor shot it down there too. Actually, I think the whole city council shot it down in Vancouver. But it seems to me like it's all these cities that are really hard up for any sort of street life or downtown that has any vitality or population or economic, like, you know, significance, you know? Like, I don't know, I've never lived in Cleveland, but I bet in the downtown there's nothing going on. I know Detroit is that way. Cincinnati, I have been there, and their downtown is like completely a stadium, giant corporate complex, and now there's a casino, and then there's like a huge swath of beautiful, abandoned 18th century, beautiful Victorian architecture that is all falling apart, and that's Cincinnati. And there's also some real failed skyways there. It just seems to me like, I don't know if a downtown casino is...
It's
just from an economic development standpoint, not a good move.
I agree with you entirely.
But why?
I can see why it's tempting to a lot of people, because you get to increase the tax rolls and you don't really have to do much. You're not really taxing. It's not like you're really increasing taxes. You're just taking a cut from this new industry that you're putting in the center of town. So I can see why it's tempting. I think Steve Berg from...
Oh, yeah, did he write a column on it?
He wrote a column on it. This is a while back when it was first proposed. And he brought up that it appears to be more of an act of desperation than anything else. And I kind of agree with him. Like, if you look at the cities that are doing this, I mean, it's not San Francisco and New York. It's Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit. Time will tell if it's going to be...
There's my list. Of cities that have done it recently. And it's not a list of awesome cities in America. Except Pittsburgh is pretty cool, I guess.
I have been to the Pittsburgh
casino.
Casino, yeah.
Well, oh, really?
I've driven by it. And that was in April. It looked like it was still kind of under construction, but it's exactly like you imagine. They designed it. I think they were trying to accommodate the neighborhood that's not really yet built there. It's kind of similar to the warehouse district, but there aren't as many people. It's still kind of recovering from deindustrialization. But it really had kind of, from my opinion, like a Block E type feel, where it was kind of an insular building. It was there. It did attract a lot of people. And they actually had like this kind of riverfront promenade that was nice and did kind of connect down the river. I think that was part of it. But I'm not sold on the idea. I mean, I don't know why I can't articulate it with, like, reasonable or rational points.
Maybe because gambling's a terrible way to run your economy? I don't know. I mean, you're basically desperate people that are getting screwed, and they know they're getting screwed, but they do it anyway, and they're kind of hooked on it. There's an addiction problem that people don't talk about, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I see that, yeah, the casino island effect, I think, is...
That's the other thing, yeah.
Steal that from your laptop.
Oh, right, sure, there. Sure.
I think it's very real. Like, it's very, very real.
Well, the idea there is that casinos are built and designed to kind of keep you, it's like the Viking Stadium will be if Wilk gets his way, right? It's keep you inside at all times. Like, you don't see the daylight out. There's no windows in a casino. There's no clocks in a casino. There's no connection to the outside world because they want to kind of keep you engaging with the machine as much as possible in the space. A lot like a shopping mall. It's kind of designed to just reinforce its own sort of system and not really engage with the city. So it's having a downtown casino seems like an oxymoron in a way, right? Like, it doesn't even make sense. Have you ever been to Atlantic City? I've been there. There's, like, the city part of Atlantic City is a vacant wasteland. It's one of the most depressing places I've ever seen. And then there's these huge fences, and then there's these shiny casinos that are lit up. But, you know, all the action is on the inside of them.
That's like Las Vegas. Have you guys ever walked like 2 blocks off of
Las Vegas, man? Yeah.
Or, like, walk 2 blocks away from like Fremont Street?
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually scary. You know, you're 2 blocks off and you can see these like skyscrapers. You know, where they have like luxury suites and so forth. And you're looking around and it's just really, really depressing.
Yeah, Las Vegas is like my least favorite city in America. Well, Atlantic City's pretty bad, but at least it has a history of being interesting, you know? I don't know.
So, I mean, do you guys see a way that it could be designed to prevent that effect? Like, if it is fairly open to its surroundings, you know, designed in such a way that, you know, maybe people don't spend all their time at the casino, they also go to some nearby restaurants. Right now, Block E's pretty dead itself. I could see a casino potentially being a benefit if it was done right, you know, done right in terms of design, more about interacting with the surroundings and not about just creating this casino island effect. I don't know if you guys see that even being possible.
Have you seen one like that? I don't know.
I haven't been to Vegas or Atlantic City. I haven't been to a casino outside of Oklahoma. So.
How about Duluth? I'm thinking of the Fond du Lac Casino in Duluth, which is, Duluth downtown's really depressing too.
Yeah.
That would be a whole other podcast should be just about Duluth, you know?
The thing with Duluth is, like, every time I'm down there, it has so much potential.
That's how I feel,
like,
too.
It has so much potential to be great, but,
That sucks.
To answer the casino question, I suppose it could be done, but... You know, you look at a lot of the urban casinos, and they fail miserably. And
to do what? To make money for the casino, or to do good things for the city?
I don't know anything about, like, their bottom line, and I'm sure that they do probably fairly well. It's a gambling establishment, and any of their competitors are really, like, regulated out of the market.
Yeah.
For the most part. But for cities, for urban design, for urbanism, and for the cities themselves, which have to spend a lot of money policing these areas because a lot of activities go on there. They've been typically bad, but that, I guess, you know, that's not to say that they couldn't do it right here, but I'm skeptical that we will do it right.
One, you know, the one thing that kind of makes me lean in favor of being in support of the idea is that it's the Lattice development behind it. They did the Carlisle condo tower, Grant Park, which was a really nice project, and Elliott Park, kind of the first major private investment in that neighborhood.
Is that the one that's like 3 stories with a coffee shop inside it?
Well, it's a condo tower.
Oh, okay.
But, they did a parking ramp and lined it with 2 or 3 story townhomes, and I think it's a really nice urban design. And it's nice for that neighborhood. I don't know. I'm just confident. And that particular developer kind of putting together a successful project that has good design, and, you know, I could see it working, although I am still skeptical about it, what effect it would have.
Is that, like, Bob Lux?
Bob Lux, yeah.
Yeah. I would agree with you on those accounts, yeah.
So you guys like it? You like the casino idea?
Well, no.
The question is, what do you do with Block E if you're not going to do a casino? Or
see, that's another reason I'm half supportive of it is, you know...
Because Block E exists, unfortunately,
it's
right?
It's yeah. Not going away.
No.
But I think Kyrian's, though, moving into Block E, at least on that level, like, they really just kind of knocked out some walls, put in some windows, addressed the street, and, like, Kyrian's, like... You could do that to all the other 3 corners of that building, and maybe positive things can happen.
Yeah, that's what they ended up doing with a lot of, like, urban mall type buildings. Like, I'm thinking of Bandana Square in St. Paul. Well, I'm just saying they turned it into office space, yeah. Right? So you take the upstairs and you turn it into, like, offices for law firms or whatever, and then the bottom you have it be kind of like what you're talking about. You know, just another office building in downtown.
That's what happened down the street from the Astor Cafe there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The River Place,
sure.
I think, on the other side of it.
The fate of all failed urban malls.
Yeah, it used to be
malls.
A casino, didn't it? Or was there some sort of gambling there or something?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
There used to be this big mall thing that they wanted. A casino, really.
I remember reading somewhere that there's possibly some sort of gambling there. Maybe I'm misremembering it.
No, because here's the political context for this casino debate is that there's, like, a group of business people associated with the racetrack in Shakopee, Canterbury Downs, that's been lobbying the state for over 10 years, probably 20 years, like a long time. And they usually have Republican legislators sponsoring bills to build a racino or allow slot machines to come into Canterbury Park, right? And it's, you know, and then the Indian casinos are in the greater Minnesota area, and they kind of have a stranglehold on the gambling sort of culture or economic, the gambling economy in Minnesota. So there's been this face-off between that, and nothing's happened for a long, long, long time. So I feel like that's part of the conversation, too, that I don't know, at least the Republican Party here wants to try to get gambling to be talked about as a revenue stream. So there's that. I also think the other part of the political picture is that cities and states are broke, right? And that's been true for many years now. So if you're in a situation where you're broke for a long time and you don't have the budget that you used to have to do development or to do economic stimulus things or whatever, right? Then you're desperate for other revenue streams. You're like, how can I make money out of nothing, you know? How can I... And it almost always involves working with the private sector. And so here's a solution for free money, right? Like, you don't have to tax anyone for this money. It'll just come out of the woodwork somehow, right? It's free. And so those kinds of answers, I think, are really appealing to city people or state people.
Is casino revenue, is that consistent year through year? Like, we're obviously taxing winnings, I would assume.
Ask the Las Vegas unemployment office right
Absolutely,
now.
Yeah, so I guess that would maybe be a concern that I would have. Well, is this a guaranteed revenue stream of X amount of dollars?
There's another whole part of the conversation we're not having right now, which is about the social impacts of gambling, you know. And it's like, there are pretty severe ones, and it's the fact that people go bankrupt and, you know, spend all their money on hoping, you know, on gambling so they're not paying taxes, they can't pay any bills, you know. People spend huge percentages of their income on gambling if you're addicted to it, which, I don't know, is that a society that we want or whatever?
And yeah, that's a concern of mine. So I'm curious, you know, would implementing a blocky casino expand that effect, or, you know, with Mystic Lake already being here and with them, you know.
But right. Have you ever been to Mystic Lake?
I haven't.
Yeah, but you would go to a blocky casino just to see what it's like, right? Because it's right there. It's right down the street.
Well, and that's what, you know, what I'm wondering is, you know, they run their free buses through all parts of Minneapolis and the metro. You know, does this effect already exist anyway when the revenue is going to Mystic Lake, whereas blocky just kind of shifts that revenue to Minneapolis without, you know, maybe slightly expands the negative impacts, but they're already there anyway. And maybe, you know, some of those negative impacts be mitigated. I've heard some of the Minneapolis City Council members talk about, you know, if we allow this to happen, we want, you know, X amount of dollars to go straight to, you know, funding jobs and, you know, high poverty areas in Minneapolis. So, you know, I'm kind of a pure Machiavellian stance for the Minneapolis resident is, you know, these effects are already out there because there are casinos in Minnesota. let's at least let Minneapolis get some of the revenue instead of letting it all go to the other casinos.
Here's a question. With the Fond du Lac casino, I don't know much about it. Other than I lost $20 there once and I haven't been back.
That's too bad, man. You were almost there. You almost got that jackpot.
Next time. Maybe that's why I've never been addicted to gambling, because I'm so terrible at it. That it's just... But where does that money go? Does that go to the state? Does that go to, like, a particular tribe? Where does that money go? Because it seems like if the money's not going to the city of Duluth, they're spending a tremendous amount of money policing that area, and what are they getting in return? I don't know.
I don't know about Duluth, but I think the casino revenues from the big casinos, which you named Mystic Lake, the one in Hinckley, Grand Casino.
Hastings, Red Lake.
There's another one, Treasure Island. I think that's the other really big one. I think those are the big three or whatever. But, yeah. I think that all goes to tribes. I think. I don't know. Does the state get a cut of that? So the... When I read the articles about the casino proposal here, and it's like the debate is, what percentage cut will the state take? 50%, which is what Mark Dayton is asking for, and is actually what Maryland takes. The state of Maryland has casinos, and they take 50%, right? And then the casino people are like, that's outrageous, and they're like, 25% is more than generous. And so there's this debate about that, you know.
I used to work for, like, an industry group. Whatever they say is just, it's bogus. It's just bogus.
Yeah.
No, but 50%, that just shows, like, how much of a profit margin there actually is.
Oh, yeah, it's just taking money from people. It's pretty, it's computerized. It's straightforward, man.
Yeah. I guess that's, you know, how that, you know, that agreement works out. But, you know, that would affect whether or not I think it's a good idea, you know. We allow it to happen, but Minneapolis gets, you know, a certain amount of funding to fund police or jobs. I could see it being, you know, not a bad strategy.
I still like Nate's idea of turning Blocky, like somehow just making it into a restaurant type thing with a hotel in it.
Well, it has a hotel, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's already there. So,
yeah.
And then you just somehow like find decent restaurants that want to be downtown and
just more local places like here instead of a bunch of chains. Which,
yeah.
Nobody really wants.
Well, yeah.
Who's going to go to the Applebee's in Block E?
You're right. When an Applebee's is everywhere, it's nowhere. So the fact that you have this special location in downtown Minneapolis is entirely irrelevant. So to switch off of a topic that we were supposed to discuss here, are you guys familiar with the Linden Corner, Linden Hills development that's going on, I think, like, 43rd and maybe Sheridan?
Yeah.
Nope.
I mean, 43rd and Upton, I think.
Upton, yeah.
Is that an old gas station or an old,
Famous Dave's?
Dave's?
I think it might be the original Famous Dave's, but I'm not sure on that. They've sold out. The developers come in and they want to build, I think, what is a 4.5-story building. Basically, it's one of these, like, new urbanism wet dreams, where you, like, great, good architecture, addresses the streets, sidewalk cafes, mixed use, blah, blah, blah. You know, they got some green patios. Their sustainability is probably thrown in there somewhere.
And it, yeah.
And the neighbors are really, really against this. Do you know more?
Yeah, I mean, you summed it up pretty well. I was surprised at just the level of opposition to that particular development. I hear a lot of complaints about height. Yeah, across the street, there's like a 6 or 7-story condo building built in the 80s with kind of crappy architecture. There's one a block south on top of a hill that, you know, probably in effect is probably hundreds of feet taller, 100 feet or so taller than what this will actually be. I don't know. I think. Linden Hills residents kind of pride themselves on their business note being kind of, you know, quaint, you know, village in nature, kind of bohemian type shops, and they see this proposed development as kind of being more bland and kind of sterile, which I can understand, but, you know, I don't know if that's a legitimate reason to not let a if development happened, especially, you know, given how it'll improve the tax base for the Minneapolis, provide new, you know, places for people to live in the neighborhood.
I remember reading an article about, are you guys familiar with where the Longfellow Grill is? I think it's called, like, West River Commons.
At Lake in the River?
Yeah, at Lake in the River, right where it switches over to Marshall in St. Paul. Apparently the developer had like 45 or so different meetings. 47 meetings.
You know exactly the number?
Maybe I should just let you talk about this one.
Well, I actually work for that neighborhood, Longfellow neighborhood now. I wasn't there at the time. They're around next. But yeah, it's kind of the same story. Michael Landrieu, who's a great developer
in the city,
does a lot of good projects, came in with a reasonable proposal. You know, I think the site used to be a gas station and a church. I think that maybe one or both were closed. And he came with a proposal to build, you know, a three-story apartment building with retail, a nice public plaza. Just the sheer amount of opposition from neighborhood residents was unbelievable. And he ultimately held 47 meetings with neighborhood residents to try to get support for the thing to get built. And that, you know, we're just talking about a three-story apartment building. And it's funny, I've heard him talk about it later, the developer, and he said, you know, one of the strongest resident opponents of the project came up to him, you know, a year after his building, and said, you know what, this has actually been a nice amenity for the neighborhood. I apologize for causing such a pain.
Why do people get so pissed off about something that they'll like?
Actually, Bill, the answer is simple, because people don't want to walk to the Dunn Brothers. They don't want to walk to a new local restaurant. They don't want to have a dry cleaner really close to transit, so when they get off the bus, they can't drop them off there. I mean, they don't want that public plaza. They like, for example, me, I run and bike in that area.
You go three blocks out of your way to avoid the public plaza, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, like, I go there, and like I go into the Dunn Brothers, and I, like, they refill my water bottle, and it's just, and like I can sit, rest, and stretch there, and it's just like a really nice place. But I wish that there was like some academic study that like followed people who are against projects like this and see like what percentage, maybe like 5, 10, 15 years in the future, how many of them have like come to like that place. Or how many, like, still dislike them. And I guess I really understand NIMBYism because, frankly, a lot of the stuff that we've built in the past, like, 50 years has really been pretty terrible to the existing urban fabric. So I kind of get that. But, you look at a development like that and, you know, it's really surprising. They treat that development as if you're putting in a 50-story IDS.
Or Nicollet Avenue Kmart.
Exactly. Yeah. Was that planning blunder number 7?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, which... Has that list included yet?
You'd have to talk to Alex Bauman. I don't know if you've met him.
I haven't.
The ball's in his court. We were switching off.
Yeah.
I was going to do one, and he was going to do one. The list is created. I got the list right here on my computer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that series. Maybe that's worthy of a podcast episode in the future, maybe.
He's promised that in the winter he's going to work on it.
That's like, when I do most of my blogging, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's just too much going on in the summer.
Oh, there is a lot going on in the summer, for sure.
I got this job thing, and it's totally killed my blogging.
Yeah. I've heard of those. What job did you get?
I work for a traffic consulting firm.
Okay.
So basically, I just do traffic data. It's good. It's a really cool firm. I really like it. The owner of the company is really awesome. So it's good.
Nice. Yeah, I'm just Bill. You're a PhD student. Yeah, I was a master student, and that's what I did most of my blogging. And
okay.
Since I got a job, yeah, it's definitely curtailed quite a bit.
So what are you guys doing? Like, are you doing urban studies? Urban
geography.
Geography. Okay. Yeah. Did you work with Judith Martin at all? Or, yeah, I heard about her passing. It's really unfortunate. She was just really a great person. Really.
Yeah.
And what are you doing?
I work for Minneapolis Neighborhood. It's not really urban planning, but that's what my education.
Do you know my friend Chris? Chris Wieger is his name.
I know the name.
He used to work.
He probably had my job before.
I think he might have.
Yeah.
He's my cousin and my buddy. Okay. We were pages together at the Minnesota State Legislature.
Really?
Yeah. It was interesting. I was on the Transportation Committee, page for the Transportation Committee.
Cool.
And that was when a Republican, Ron Earhart was his name. He's from Edina. He's a House member from Edina. Anyway, he was the chair. And he was one of the Republicans that voted to override the veto of Governor Pawlenty to pass the gas tax hike or whatever.
Was it 08, maybe earlier?
Yeah, it was around that period of time. There were five Republicans that were turncoats and funded infrastructure, like, you know, by raising the gas tax a little bit or whatever they did. I think that's what they did. Raise the gas tax.
Was that the CTIP vote? Wasn't that the 5 county?
No, it's just statewide.
Okay. I think it was like 8 cents too, wasn't it?
Something like that.
8 cents.
Yeah. Which I guess one of my questions is like, how are we going to fund anything if we can't? So that was a very small hike of the gas tax, and there were these five Republicans that had to like vote against their governor, and I think a couple of them got primaried out of existence after that. Anyway, it's just it seems like this. That's why it's like this new era of casino funding of infrastructure projects and state economies based on like things that are really dicey, literally and also figuratively. You know, like, is that really a revenue stream? I don't know. It's like that's the era that we're going to be living in now. It's like to fund anything.
I was reading about Singapore and they have a lot of casinos. I guess it's revenue stream.
Yeah, they do, huh? Singapore.
But it's geared toward like tourism and foreigners. So if you're a foreigner, okay, you can go in there and you can gamble all that you would like.
Yeah.
But if you're a resident, before you get into the casino, like if you have like a Singapore ID or what have you, it's something like a $60 or $70 charge just to enter the casino. So like their message is very clear, like pay us up front and then gamble. Unless you're a foreigner, then we'll gladly take your money. Yeah.
Did you see Phyllis Kahn's?
Oh, yeah. I love her.
Yeah.
Oh, slot machines at the airport?
Yeah. So I have a quote. She says, "All gambling is a regressive tax on stupidity." But if you put the gambling at the airport, it would be a progressive tax on stupidity because you have people with higher incomes at the airport. Plus, 80% of the traffic at the airport is from out of state. It's kind of a creative idea, and, you know, if we're going to use gambling to fund a stadium, slot machines at the airport might, you know, it's a pretty good idea.
That's why I like Phyllis Kahn.
Yeah.
So she's like a performance artist of a legislator. I actually have met her, and I really like her personally, too, but... Because she introduces crazy bills. They're conceptually really interesting,
yeah,
and they'll never pass. Yeah. Like one of them was to give 12-year-olds the right to vote. She got famous for doing that
really?
Many years ago. Because she like they're adults. They should learn about. They're not adults, but they want to learn about civic participation, and this is the way to do it. Give them the right to vote.
Yeah. So I don't know. I like this idea. I could get behind slot machines here.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Why not? Yeah. I mean, you're right. It's a why not.
Plus, airports are another space that is just terrible. Like, just get me out of my misery when I'm in an airport,
yeah,
man. There's a few good airports that are decent public spaces, but most of them are just, I think, are just really bad. I don't know. They're depressing.
Have you been to Denver?
No.
Creepiest airport. Take
really?
Look at the murals. They're conspiracy theorists that go nuts about this. It's just these apocalyptic murals that seem
really
totally inappropriate. We just have to Google it. I can't really explain it. But one complaint about like the Denver airport is it's so far out of town. However, as someone who's lived in South Minneapolis, like, I almost kind of wish that the airport wasn't really kind of in the smack center of Metro. Like, I suppose, yes, it's a longer drive or train ride or what have you to the center, but anybody who lives, like, south of maybe 50-something in, like Longfellow, Cooper, Standish, I mean, the airport is, like, you go to a public meeting, like, that's it. That's what they're talking about.
Even beyond that, Kingfield neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, I lived in Kingfield for a while too.
The overhead noise is just ridiculous. I mean, every 30 seconds, if the wind's right, you get a plane flying over your head. So, I mean, much of South Minneapolis, it's a huge nuisance just having that noise. And I agree that the benefit of having a short trip to the airport probably doesn't outweigh that. The quality of life, cost, just having all of that noise.
Suppose it keeps housing affordable.
That's what the murals look like, right? Is that the one you mean?
That looks way too nice. There's got to be another mural.
Okay, so this is when I Googled
this,
Denver.
Like this, right
this one?
There we go. Oh my God. That's right going into like the
That's like some weird fascist weird stuff. Are you kidding me?
No, this is real. This is real.
I don't know. Wow. I didn't see that. I was in the Denver airport a few months ago. I didn't notice these.
So it's like this guy, I don't know what that is. That's like a weird Nazi stormtrooper.
It's a
gas mask guy with a gun.
Nazi stormtrooper with a gas mask holding an AK-47, and in the background there are people, and it looks like they're running.
Well, Denver, of all places.
Yeah, Denver, yeah.
Actually, Denver is one of the cities that's most commonly linked to Minneapolis because it's about the same size. Can I have another beer right now? Also, one of those pizzas with the bacon on it.
Yeah. Thank you. Enough. And it's happy hour.
Is happy hour ending?
Yeah, that's the situation.
You know what? Would it be too much? Yeah, I'll grab one more for happy hour, yeah.
Okay.
All
right.
I'm just saying Denver and Seattle are our two most comparable cities, like, if you were to do a comparison with Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of the, I don't know, there are a lot of differences, but size and geographic, like, kind of significance. Like, we're both in the middle of nowhere, Denver and Minneapolis, and Seattle is a little more connected to stuff, but it's also, I don't know. So Denver is interesting.
I kind of consider Denver and Seattle the most comparable to different cities that I grew up in. Charlotte was also
that
I think of. But yeah, it's interesting comparing Minneapolis to those cities. You know, Denver with their transit system, they're just making leaps and bounds. I think they already have like three light rail lines, and they have already approved funding to build three or four more new transit lines. I was just there a couple months ago.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. It's great. You know, their downtown has a lot going for it. You know, Minneapolis, there's a lot of kind of dead areas. It's just got concrete office buildings, but not much else going on at the street level. Whereas Denver, I didn't get as much of that effect. Just the progress they've made with funding and building transit is really, really impressive. I've never been to Seattle, but I was pretty impressed with Denver.
I think what I mean, those are definitely the most comparable cities, but you know, Minneapolis St. Paul has kind of like two centers, and it's really weird. Kind of, I can't think of any other like large metro area that has two centers that are. I mean, the whole metro area is really connected, but you really have two distinct centers, and like. Not so much now, but even if you go back 10, 20 years, if you lived in St. Paul, like, you would almost kind of resent the Twin Cities kind of categorization. You're like, no, I'm St. Paul. So, I mean, size-wise, you know, economies, things like that, yeah, it's similar, but I don't know, I really like the distinctive two cities kind of merged to one. Like, something about that I think is very unique, and I don't think it's really replicated anywhere else in the United States.
There are the quad cities in Iowa.
Oh, really? Okay, well, never mind. You're totally wrong, Nate.
Technically, they doubled us. Not nearly.
So we're Denver, Seattle divided by two. They're Denver, Seattle divided by four.
Yeah.
I actually really like the quad cities.
I haven't been there either.
Okay.
It's not that far away. We should go.
Yeah, maybe.
Road trip podcast.
Here's the other questions or things that Mulad is Mike. You know Mike anyway.
Mike
Like hicks.
Rail guy.
Yeah. Anyway, he was like, he recommended some things to talk about. Stillwater Bridge, which there's been some news in that in the last week, I would say. Central Corridor being one third done, and Nice Ride, I guess, the Nice Ride program. So, any of those grab your attention?
I mean, Central Corridor, that's exciting. They're really moving along. I don't know if you guys, I think you both are St. Paul residents. I don't know what it's been like on university during construction.
Really bad, unless if you're in a car.
Yeah. I'm curious how small businesses are doing.
I live closer to you than I live to the Central Corridor. So, I've had really no...
Oh, yeah.
I've had nothing.
Well, I've only heard stories, like Bonnie's Cafe isn't one of the places. It's always been a rundown cafe with, you know, I'm almost always the only one there, you know. And it's in an old industrial neighborhood that probably at one point had a lot of workers. Like, it's by the Dubliner, which is a little Irish bar on University and, like, I don't know, what street?
Creighton,
yeah.
Vandalia,
that's what it is. Yeah, that's the industrial neighborhood, and then old industrial neighborhoods often have like little diners that I think used to be more relevant than they are today. Like the other one, the Ideal Diner in Central Avenue, Minneapolis, is a similar kind of place in Northeast. Anyway, but yeah, Bonnie's Cafe is this really old school place that hasn't changed anything in 50 years, and I bet their business has gone down by half. My friend has been going there and told me about it. I hear stories, but...
I guess it's good to see progress. The thing with the Central Corridor right now, like in the construction phase, is that the places that are best, like, designed for rail on the Central Corridor, they're not necessarily... They're the places that are being hurt the most. Like, if you look at, like...
Like Bonnie's Cafe.
Yeah, if you look at, like, the Snelling University area... Target or Walmart or the strip malls there, it's like they're going to benefit tremendously by the Central Corridor.
But why?
What's that?
Why?
Well, because you have a stop there, right? You have a stop there. I think Target is going to have a stop right in front of it, right in Hamlin, I believe. You know, they're going to benefit. So I shouldn't say they're going to benefit the most, but they will benefit from it because you do have that extra transit access. There are a lot of people in the university that take the 16, you know, the local bus route, or maybe even like 54 or 56, I think. But I think that they will benefit from rail, just like any other business would benefit. However, during the construction phase, they still have their parking. Whereas, like, the parking for places like Bonnie's or the Dubliner or a whole host of other places, their parking is gone. So, like, they're losing that on-street parking, and access is limited. So it seems like the places that are the worst design-wise for an urban space are actually going to benefit the most during the construction process.
That's a good point.
Maybe that's just, like, two beers in me talking, and I didn't articulate that well enough, but...
No, you're right. Well, I think that's absolutely the case.
But the places that you want, the places like Bonnie's, which I know is right next to the Dubliner, like it's in the same like...
Yeah, it's the same building. It's the same building. It's like a Franken building.
Yeah.
It's like two sides. It's like a Jekyll and Hyde scenario with that, you know? Because Bonnie is a really sweet old lady, and the Dubliner is like this, you know, 32-year-old drunk Irish guy. Right? So...
I like the Dubliner, and I'm only 27, so I don't know. But...
No, but if you were to personify those two institutions, that's what you would have. Like an 85-year-old grandma who's, like, knitting all day long, and then she turns into a drunk Irish guy at night, and you're like, what happened? Sean O'Mulligan?
What? Yeah. But, I mean, I'm really happy to see the Central Corridor making progress. I don't really have anything else to say.
Yeah, I don't have any profound thoughts either. You know, I'm kind of just interested in seeing, you know, what amount of change it actually increases. You know, I just kind of want to see what level of new development occurs, if any. You know, how, if it really is a game changer in terms of kind of just the Twin Cities transportation culture doesn't, you know, really promote a lifestyle built around transit.
I think that it will. Like, I'm gonna use a friend, like, as an example. We'll probably listen to this, so I'm sorry if I, anyways. But he went from, like, living in, like, very suburban Tucson. He was relocated there after college for his job. And literally, like, 20-minute drive anywhere. He moved again. He got relocated with work back to the Twin Cities. He decides to live 808 Barry. It's kind of like my university and 280 about it. And before the rail line was even, you know, I mean, it was being proposed at the time. You know, you already saw, like, advertising, like, light rail living.
Yeah.
And this was, like, this is four years before it's even going to be completed, and they're still advertising it.
Even more years than that. Because we're still a couple years away right now, right? It's going to be done in 2014, and it's 2011 right now. And they've had construction already done. Like, people have been living in those lofts at Raymond and lofts further to the east, you know, for years now. So we're talking like 8-year lead-up time or something like that. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think the development really is already starting to occur, or at least the speculation is starting to occur, which I usually am not a fan of speculation, but in this case, I think that is probably a positive thing for St. Paul, at least, and Minneapolis as well.
I'm a fan of blogger speculation.
But, like, I think they're called the Carlton Lofts.
Yeah, those are the ones I'm thinking of.
And there are a few other developments in that area, even, like, a few blocks back. And I think that's great, but, Bill, you might be more well-versed in this. Didn't St. Paul, like, they have, like, a zoning overlay district, and they've said, we're going to have a height limit? And I think it's, like, I forget what it is, but, like, they had, like, this controversial height limit.
Yeah. It's only, I think, portions of the corridor. It's more towards the east, kind of Frogtown area.
Yeah.
I saw that too. Bill, do you know much more about that?
I just know what you know, basically. There was this it was an immediate sort of reaction to the idea that there would be big development along University in the eastern portion, which is the poor portion of the street, which is kind of closer to where I live. And it's like, and so there was a compromise. The city council ended up, like, rescinding some of the ideas that they initially had and putting more height restrictions on it. And honestly, I think that doesn't matter very much. Because there's not going to be a huge boom in development on the Dale Street, Victoria Street area anytime soon. And, you know, maybe it'll be an evolutionary process.
As long as the best steakhouse doesn't go anywhere. Like,
have you really been there?
Yeah, I've been there a couple times.
Oh, no kidding. The part of that compromise, is it really the best?
If you're talking bang for your buck, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay, because it's only $4 for a prime rib.
On Tuesdays. Wednesdays you're going to pay $7, but still. It's pretty good.
The other part of that deal that I really didn't like, so there was this, you know, compromise about the zoning overlay that the city council kind of backed out at the last minute because of pressure. And it was that they were going to grandfather in way more auto-oriented businesses. So I don't know. That's the thing that I really think needs to go, is, like, Midas muffler shops all up and down the street and, like, that kind of thing. And, like, drive-thrus. Like, are we going to allow drive-thrus to be built on University when we're going to make it a transit street, you know? Drive-thrus are, I don't know, just make a store and have a parking lot, okay, but don't drive-through. Get out of your car. Is it that hard to get some chicken, on your feet?
I have to drive to work. I mean, they're really...
Do you drive through, Nate?
What's that?
Do you drive through?
No, I don't, but I drive to work, and every day I drive by, like, this Starbucks that's kind of on the Minneapolis...
Do you drive through to get the coffee?
I don't drive through, no. But it's on, like, the border of Minneapolis and, like, St. Louis Park. It's like, is it Minneapolis, is it St. Louis Park?
Yeah.
It's a Starbucks, and every day that I drive by, like, I always notice, like, the line for the drive-thru is just packed back 10-15 cars. But you can just drive up, park, walk in, and get out, and save yourself like 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Every day, but people still like queue up, like they still line up. And I guess I've never understood that. Like, it's like the drive-in is always longer. That too, and then like after hours, the only. Alright, this might be like the alcoholic in me speaking, but have you ever tried to walk through a drive-thru?
I bike through drive-thrus.
Since high school. They don't allow you to do it. Like, if you're on a bike or you're walking, they can't serve you. So obviously you guys haven't been to the Burger King at 3 o'clock.
Because they don't serve people. The drive-thru is the only thing that's open, is what you're saying, right? Yeah.
So if you walk
that's up, discrimination. There should be a lawsuit right there.
Yeah, that's discrimination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll write Burger King tomorrow. this would be good. Stillwater Bridge.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like what I was saying earlier about the deal imperative. So just what happened yesterday, I think, or today, is that Amy Klobuchar got the bridge bill passed through the Transportation Committee or whatever committee in the Senate that needed to be passed through. So now the only thing left is to have votes on the floor. And that's just a matter of greasing the wheels, which means probably it'll happen.
I think that funding still needs to come through.
No, it's federal funding.
No, but isn't there some local funding that still needs to come from the state of Minnesota or Wisconsin?
It's already been allocated, though.
Oh, it has been?
Yeah. MnDOT's good to go on it. The federal funding's in place. It just boggles the mind how a project like this, which, so little benefit, gets so much support from both sides of the aisle. It's pretty depressing in my mind. We're talking about $700 million for a bridge, which is, I think, twice as much as any bridge in Minnesota history. But it only serves 16,000 cars a day, which, in the grand scheme of things, isn't that much. And I know Strong Towns did some pretty.
They've been killer on this.
Yeah, they've done some good analysis. I think they said they looked at the number of structurally deficient bridges in the entire state. It's over 1,000. And they, those bridges carry, I think, over 1 million cars. I don't know if that's.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. A huge number.
Yeah, just a huge number in comparison. And you could fix all those bridges for something like $500 million. Yeah, we're spending $700 million on this one
to
bridge.
Build a new one.
To build a new bridge.
That no one needs.
I like the way that they put it. It was something like, you could fix whether it was deficient or not, you could fix every single bridge in the state of Minnesota. And then give every resident of Stillwater $12,000. Yeah. And,
of course, that'll never happen, because no one's going to give $12,000 to every resident of Stillwater.
Right. Like, if you were to ask, the people of Stillwater, who I guess, I don't even think it would benefit Stillwater, but if you gave them the option of, you would have this bridge where every single person in Stillwater could have $12,000, like, it'd be a no-brainer. I would move to Stillwater. I question whether this bridge, even at the local Stillwater level, Stillwater obviously wants it built, the city is, there was this issue that they gave $80,000 to a lobbyist firm to advocate for the bridge, which they had to eventually, the lobbyist firm had to give back because of some, I forget what the law was, but they had to give the money back.
Yeah.
But here's my question, you have that many cars that are going through Stillwater, but what does that mean? You have, this bridge is obviously in Stillwater, it's deficient, and something needs to be done with that bridge there, but you have a lot of cars moving very slowly through your downtown, which is mostly composed of, small businesses, right?
Yeah.
That's high visibility.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You have traffic congestion, but I've been to Stillwater a lot. I have a friend who lives in Stillwater. I've been there a ton, and it's actually not unpleasant as a pedestrian during that, during peak hours, because cars are moving so slow that you can pretty much cross at will.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people actually do say, all right, there's a lot of traffic over this bridge. I'm going to stop in downtown. I'm gonna have a shake at Darla's. I'm going to go to the DQ. I'm going to go to the Starbucks.
Sure.
But I think that there's actually this, like, weird sort of benefit to Stillwater.
Having that traffic.
Having that congestion. Like, it seems dumb, but, like, maybe someone will stop, have a beer at Whitey's, and then go across to Wisconsin where they can drink and drive and it's not a problem.
So what you're saying is traffic congestion in small towns is a good thing.
It can be. It's kind of like a David Owen, like, Green Metropolis thing, where, like, there are benefits to traffic congestion. Like, it's on, like, a city street, like, it'll increase visibility, and slow traffic motivates people to stop, and it motivates them to wait. And
yeah.
They usually do that at, like, coffee shops or bars or restaurants or whatever. I don't know if there have been any, like, academic studies that can back any of this up, but, like, in theory, I think that it works.
As an academic, I could probably tell you no. And if there are, they're not any good. But I did read a bunch of studies about casinos this afternoon. So
I'm going to take a quick break.
Yeah, actually, maybe we'll just call it a day right now.